this is Dr. Bob Evans, and welcome to our podcast, Parental Alienation from Couch to Courtroom and Beyond. We will discuss the resisting and refusing dynamic, commonly referred to as parental alienation, how you'll know it's happening in your case, and what can be done about it. Parental alienation can cause stress and trauma in high-conflict cases. These podcasts focus on how attorneys and mental health professionals can support families and children. Well, hello and Happy New Year. I just wanted to share an article that I was reading again by Dr. Burnett and his colleagues, a doctor, medical doctor, Wambolt, and Dr. Medical Dr. Narrow. Both Wambolt and Narrow are affiliated with the American Psychiatric Association. And the article is talking about child affected by parental relationship distress. This is it's not a diagnosis. It's a mental condition. It's considered an area of other conditions that may be a focus of clinical attention. In the DSM-5, and now it's, of course, the DSM-5-TR, text revised, in case you didn't know that. And so an interesting presentation by Dr. Burnett et al., where they talk about a review of the literature establishing that children are affected by parental relationship distress. And the research is very interesting and very clear. And so for clinicians and attorneys and parents who represent themselves, this is a mental condition that can be diagnosed by a competent mental health professional. And it talks about four common scenarios that are described in much more detail in terms of children may react to parental intimate partner distress. They may react to parental intimate partner violence, to acrimonious divorce, and to unfair disparagement of one parent by another. Disparagement by one parent to the other is basically a component of parental alienation and needs to be paid attention to. Reactions of the child can include the onset of an exacerbation of psychological symptoms. We see alienated children all the time that have a number of problems, mental health problems, academic problems, behavior problems, very, very likely related to this mental condition of a child affected by the parental distress. We talk about semantic complaints. It's very common when we test these kids that we suspect alienation cases. Boy, the child admits to their own semantic issues. There's an internal loyalty conflict. The child is very conflicted in terms of, keep in mind, children love both parents most of the time, if not all the time, and then something is interfering with that affection. And, Dr. Warshak talks about, the three reasons that a child will reject a parent. One is basically there's some psychological problems with the child. The second is that the rejected parent has behaved in a manner that deserves, if you will, or is justified for the rejection. And the third factor is somebody's manipulating the child to reject the other parent. That's parental alienation, right? And so we talk about the exacerbation of psychological symptoms, semantic complaints, internal loyalty conflict, and in the extreme, drumroll, parental alienation, obviously leading to a loss of a parent-child relationship. And so Dr. Burnett in this article really spells out the implications, the phenomenon of children reacting to the distress of a parental relationship. And basically, talks about like a child affected by this parental relationship distress. They display impaired functioning in behavioral, cognitive, affective, and or physical domains. So an example would be behavior problems, which include oppositional behavior towards the parents, towards school, towards teachers, towards authority figures. The child's reluctance or refusal to have a relationship with a parent without a good reason. More often than not, when we interview these alienated children, they have very vague complaints many times, very vague complaints about the rejected parent. Well, they get angry a lot or they yell a lot. Yelling a lot is not going to cause a child to reject the parent. And somehow there are people that try and make a case like that in the courtroom, and it just doesn't work. And so basically the child has refusing reluctance or refusing, resisting, if you will, in terms of the new terminology, basically to have a relationship with a parent without any good reason. Obviously, that's parental alienation. Cognitive problems, it will include cognitive dissonance, discomfort due to conflicting beliefs. In other words, the child is conflicted in terms of rejecting a parent. And that's a lot of stuff. A lot of that goes under the radar. So that's happening internally to the child. And that's where the trauma and the stress come in terms of, you know, the adverse childhood experiences. Well, when we look at the scope of the problem, you know, children, of course, are influenced more often, for better or worse, by events that occur in their family. And this includes the opinions, the moods, the actions of the parents, and the interactions between the parents and all of the family members. So depending on the circumstances of a child's family, a child may be adversely affected by a significant degree when there is a persistent and substantial conflict between the parents. Children 9 times out of 10 want to stay out of that conflict. They typically do not take sides. And that's what happens is the whole process of alienation begins to morph out of that very disorganized system that is now fostered upon the child. So there's a lot of studies, a number of studies, and I just mentioned one in terms of the adverse childhood experience, where the psychosocial risk factors for the development of mental health problems in children are documented by a relationship to the parental relationships, leading to increased problems. So an example is the adverse childhood experience. It's called ACEs. If you want to Google that, many people still don't know about that study. It's a huge study out of California. And it's not just one study anymore. It's like happening all over the world since 1998. It was first published in the Journal of Preventive Medicine in 1998. More than 18,000 adults were part of the study. And they found 12.5% of those people reported exposure to interparental violence. And then an additional 23% dealt with parental divorce. So just those two of stressors out of 10 stressors are noted to lead to impaired health in adulthood. In other words, the children grow up or are living in a continuous stress state, and ultimately that stress leads to the deterioration of a child's health, physical health, not to mention the psychological issues that go along with, you know, being depressed, being feeling inadequate, feeling rejected, etc. So there was a Duke study, Duke University, a Duke developmental epidemiology program that showed that interpersonal problems alone were associated with increased risks for disruptive behavior disorders in children compared to children with no risks, and contributed to both internalizing and externalizing problems in children when other risks were also present. The Duke study reported on more early childhood stressors than the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experience study, and were able to separate interparental problems from divorce, exposure to interparental violence, and childhood maltreatment. These studies showed that the increased numbers of childhood stressors lead to increased likelihood of developmental and a number of internalizing and externalizing disorders in children. In other words, children are affected by parental distress. Obviously, if the distress leads to violence between the parents, that's going to make the situation even worse. And then there's a triangulation effect. In other words, there's a parent-child coalition formed that basically results in a loyalty conflict in a family. And obviously, those are the situations that we deal with in the whole area of parental alienation. And we talk about loyalty conflicts. Loyalty conflict occurs when a child tries to maintain affection and good feelings towards each of his or her parents, you know, even though they are angry and hostile toward each other. Now, basically having a low level of divided loyalty for short duration is not usually very problematic for kids. But the child realizes that their parents sometimes get argue, they get angry with each other, but then it goes back to normal and it becomes not a major issue. However, when the children experience a high degree of divided loyalty, in other words, the conflict is persistent, it's very obvious, and it doesn't let up, then we see more serious loyalty conflicts develop within a child, and especially when one parent tries to pressure the child to support that parent's side of the argument. And so that's what we see. In family systems theory, the pattern may be described as triangulation, a concept that explains the origin and the maintenance of some dysfunctional family relationships. A common form of triangulation is cross-generational coalition. This is straight out of the literature, when family therapists have linked to maladjustment of the involved child. So we see cross-generational coalitions that therapists basically have to deal with in terms of children's maladjustment. And this leads frequently to physical and psychological symptoms when there's a high level of loyalty conflicts within a family. In parental alienation cases, the child is reluctant or refuses to have a relationship with a parent without a good reason. And then what typically the child has a false belief that the rejected parent has been abusive or neglectful. Children with false beliefs about events that never actually occurred may develop false memories, that is, memories of non-events. So one of the arguments where you hear professionals saying, well, you know, parental alienation is like a phobia, and so we'll treat it like a phobia, and that'll fix it. Well, it turns out that it's hard to have a phobia when there's no actual event that you're phobic about. In other words, the desensitization process actually either takes an extremely long time or is not really effective. And so the whole idea of treating it like a phobia just frankly doesn't really work. In most cases, parental alienation is created in a context of a high conflict, separation, or divorce by one parent indoctrinating the child to unjustifiably dislike or fear the other parent. Alienating parent, frequently referred to either as the preferred parent or the favored parent, and there's the rejected or the targeted parent. So in terms of severity, parental alienation can be mild, moderate, or severe. We know about that. Mild parental alienation means that the child resists contact with the targeted parent, but ultimately enjoys the relationship with that parent once they're together, once they're having their parenting time. A moderate parental alienation means that the child strongly resists contact and is persistently oppositional during parenting time with the targeted parent. There's a persistence. It usually wears off at some point until it's time to go back to the favorite or the alienating parent, and then it kind of kicks back in. So we see this cycle when a child is with the targeted parent. A lot of resistance up front, especially when they're in the front of the house of the favorite parent. Then they kind of warm up after a while, and then when it becomes time to go back to the favorite parent, the rejection kind of kicks in, and it just gets a little more severe. In cases of severe parental alienation, well, the child basically persistently, adamantly refuses any contact. Basically, they'll hide, they'll run away, they'll threaten to kill themselves if you make me go to that parent. And so it becomes a really serious matter at that point. And in some cases of parental alienation, the alienating parent induces the child to say, to believe, and falsely remember that they were sexually abused. They really never were loved by that other parent. And so it becomes that's the whole basis of what we have to deal with in the legal system. Children who are experience parental alienation basically fulfill the definition of the the child affected by parental relationship distress. They meet this mental condition, and they're affected by the conflict between the parents, with the result forming they have a really an enmeshed relationship with one parent, which is very unhealthy, and a rejecting relationship with the target or the rejected parent. There may be other conditions that can be assigned to the case in addition to parental alienation. The parent-child relational problem can be used in your clinical work. So what Dr. Burnett was suggesting is that although the child affected by parental relationship distress is new, it's relatively new, it's not really well understood, it's not really well known, quite honestly, but it does deserve some attention. And mental health professionals who work with children, adults, and families really need to be aware of this as a potential category and deal with it appropriately. So I hope this was helpful. And again, Happy New Year, and we'll keep on plugging. Thank you so much for joining us today. For more information on this topic, please visit www.drbobevans.com or www.naopas.com. We offer classes for both legal and mental health professionals to help educate them on the signs and strategies of parental alienation and how to move forward for a healthier environment for the children of divorce. Please visit www.naopas.com and sign up for our courses and use coupon code PODCAST for a 50% discount.